Once again, you already know what it is and you already know where you have reached. It is Saturday, September 14th, 2019, and this is the very best up-and-coming professional wrestling podcast anywhere in the world. I am your host and founder, Sean Hubbard. What up, though? And this is the Hubbard Wrestling Weekly Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, do you hear this theme music? Do you hear this classic WWE theme music? If you're an 80s baby like myself, or a 90s baby, or a 70s baby, or even a new millennial baby, and have any kind of idea of the history of professional wrestling, this theme music should get you fired up, for it is the iconic theme music of Saturday night's main event, and that is the theme of tonight's Hubbard Wrestling Weekly Podcast show. We are looking back at our 10 greatest moments in the history of the main event, the Friday night special, and Saturday night's main event, the Saturday night special that aired on NBC and Fox from 1985 to 1992. I got a big time guest in store for you tonight, but before I introduce you to him, I got to reintroduce all my listeners to this, HasKreia.com. For all my listeners listening in all 50 states and internationally, there's only one way for all my business owners out there to project their business in the best possible light, and that is through HasKreia.com. Check their portfolio right now. Check the list of who's who clients that my good friend Alex and his staff have worked with. I'm talking about web development. I'm talking about web platforming. I'm talking about projecting your business in a way that will make it pop and make your business successful. So that's HasKreia.com, HasKreia.com, because we love tech. And wherever you are and however you may be listening, I salute you. God bless you. Thank you. Just like HasKreia.com loves tech, Hubbard Wrestling Weekly loves wrestling and combat sports. What a big weekend we have going on right now. UFC Fight Night going on in Canada as we speak. Tonight in Vegas, Tyson Fury defends his lineal heavyweight championship of the world as he continues his quest to get that rematch from that iconic heavyweight championship fight with Deontay Wilder. We're looking for that rematch hopefully later this year, probably next year. But tonight he defends the lineal heavyweight championship, Tyson Fury, on ESPN Plus and Fight TV. But my goodness, tonight, another retro review edition of HubbardWrestlingWeekly.com. Saturday night's main event, one of the most iconic shows in the history of professional wrestling, as we stand on the doorstep of a new wave in professional wrestling. NXT on USA debuts this Wednesday night. Friday night SmackDown coming to us in October on Fox. Monday Night Raw continues to be the longest reigning and running episodic TV show on cable in history. Wrestling is rolling. AEW starts very, very soon. AEW starts their weekly Wednesday night show on TNT. TNT has wrestling again. Does anybody not feel excited? Does anybody not feel that retro feel, that throwback feel of excitement? You got NXT and AEW going head to head. You got WWE splitting up their products on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights. Pay-per-views, Ring of Honor, New Japan still doing their thing. It's amazing. It's an amazing time to be a professional wrestling fan, but there's no better way to honor the future and even the present than to go and look back into the past. I'm talking about the mega powers, Hogan and Savage. I'm talking about Andre the Giant. I'm talking about Bad News Brown. I'm talking about Akeem, the Big Boss Man, and the Doctor of Style, Slick. I'm talking about Demolition. I'm talking about the World Wrestling Federation, now known as WWE. And I'm talking about Saturday night's main event. And my special guest is a man who's been on this show before. He is my brother in the wrestling community, a good friend of mine. And he's going to tell us his five favorite Saturday night main event moments. I'm going to give you my favorite five Saturday night main event moments. And we're going to have a lot of fun, just like we always do. Welcome back to my show, Conrad of the one and only Everything Pro Wrestling Podcast. Welcome back to the show, my brother.
Hey, what's going on, Sean? Thank you so much for having me back on the show. It's always fun to do these with you, so I'm ready to talk some pro wrestling whenever you are, man, so let's get into it.
All right, it's lit, man, it's lit. So, yeah, so basically, man, like, we're looking back to 1985 all the way through the 1992 era. It kind of got revised in 2006, but I'm talking about the heyday of Saturday Night's Main Event / the Main Event. Some of the greatest moments in the history of wrestling have taken place. If you disagree with that, maybe we can say that they were the greatest moments that led to the greatest moments in the history of wrestling. But either way, Saturday Night's Main Event and that series definitely left its thumbprint on the business. What do you feel about the historical value of Saturday Night's Main Event, Conrad?
When you asked me to go back, and I'm doing my research for everything with this,
yep,
I kind of went personal route with a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, this was always important because the main thing I thought of is right now, the way WWE's current model, content structure, whatever you want to call it, is, I feel there's an oversaturation of pro wrestling.
Facts.
I just put out kind of a thing to my group, Twitter, and everything else on how content creators are going to handle this new schedule that we're going to have in the fall. Like, everything's about to change within a month. We're going to have AEW on Wednesdays, NXT Wednesdays, Monday Night Raw, SmackDown's going to Friday. You've still got MLW, Ring of Honor, Impact. There's so, and I haven't even talked about New Japan or anything else. There's so much wrestling to cover that it's going to be difficult for some people. And I'm just wondering how everyone's going to tackle this and do their thing with it. And back in these days, getting back to the main event and Saturday Night's Main Event, when you really look at this, it's pretty dope. If you go back and think about, like, I yearned for wrestling content back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt the same way. I couldn't get enough.
Yes.
If I had a channel back then, I would have went nuts. I would have just watched it all day long. And it's just completely different. So when you got a special like this, you had to watch it. You were like, oh, that's coming on March 15th, 1992 at this time on this channel. I'm like, let me make sure I know which channel it is. And you would go and check TV Guide channel. Yeah, these youngsters don't know about all this.
They don't know about that, man.
Yeah, the hard times. But you cared so much about these special events because WWE wasn't putting this on for no reason. They wanted you to see something on this.
I think your perspective is right on point because with us being the ages that we are in our 30s, we can appreciate the new school because we remember the old school. And like you talk about, all this on-demand stuff that we're still young enough to appreciate but old enough to remember the days when we didn't have it. Like you said, TV guys and turning TVs with our hands, right? Now we can look back and we can say, wow, like how lucky were we to look through and see those, you know, big mega events that only came around once in a while. But then again, in 2019, how lucky are we that we're able to kind of see this stuff whenever we want and kind of go back in time whenever we want. And with the new fall season, I think, man, I'm excited, bro. Like, it's like, you know, you're looking at this thing and it's like you just ran it down, NXT and AEW on Wednesdays, and Friday we'll have wrestling again, and Monday we'll have wrestling, and it's like every day, like, we're going to be in a situation where we can have some quality, God willing, quality content to look forward to every single week. But that's the enormous quality that Saturday Night Main Event / the Main Event, looking back in retrospect, had, because it wasn't every week. It wasn't every month. It was once every couple of months. It was a situation similar to Clash of Champions and WCW, Clash of the Champions. I don't want to make that mistake. Clash of Champions is the new wave thing that's out right now, but Clash of the Champions in WCW and Saturday Night's Main Event just took it to a whole nother level. It was just one of those things where we can look back and say, wow, thank God we can remember those times. And if you don't remember, go to the network and check it out. But we're going back in time, man, and I think we can alternate our moments. I'm going to let you go first, of course, but we're going to go back in time, and we're going to talk about our 10 most memorable Saturday Night Main Event / Main Event moments. Five for you, five for me. and we're going to let the people hit us up on Twitter. Conrad, let them know your Twitter right quick.
You can find me at EPW Show.
Right, and I'm at Hub_Wrestling. Let us know what you think about our choices. There are a multitude of choices. Start it off, man. You're one of the five greatest moments on your side in Saturday Night Main Event / the Main Event history.
I have to start off with an excellent wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one's probably not on most people's list, and it is from, actually, it's my wife's birthday.
Nice.
The original birthday. 11/28, we have a match that took place between the Macho Man Randy Savage mm-hmm. versus Bret the Hitman Hart.
Mm.
Now, this isn't Bret the Hitman Hart that you would grow to know, but to me, this was the breakout performance when you said, that dude's really good. There's something special about him.
Okay, okay.
Keep an eye on him. So, Macho Man Randy Savage during this time period was on the rise. I think Macho Man was a big character for the WWF from 1986, probably up until the day he almost got ready to leave. I'd say until 92.
Yeah.
Macho Man should have been in that top spot just like Hogan and could have carried the company, I think, in the same light. It's just they chose Hogan over him. But the Macho Man was on the rise in 1987. He had just lost the Intercontinental title. There were rumors of them trying to put the rocket to this man's back. And you got to think, WrestleMania 4 was coming up during this time period as well.
Yes.
Now, during my research, I tried to figure out when did Macho Man Randy Savage turn babyface in all of this? And there never is really an official like babyface term for him. It kind of just happened. Is how everyone explained it to me, at least from my research.
No, that's 100% right. It was super organic, man.
Yeah, so people just started to cheer Macho Man. Macho Man rolled with it. So we have a technician and a phenomenal wrestler and entertainer in the ring together. And you're getting yourself a great match. You've got Jimmy Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart as the X-Factors on the outside. You've got everything just happening all at once with Bret the Hitman Hart. He's a heel at this time. Such good stuff, to quote Vince McMahon. And it's just fun to go back and watch this. I love seeing the rise of a good match between two superstars. You see all of Bret's patented maneuvers that he used, and they're so crisp here because he's so young. And he's moving fast with the Macho Man. Macho Man knew how to pace the matches. And I don't know who was teaching who in this match, but Macho knew how to pace the matches to where it's like, all right, Bret, slow it down a little bit. Here's what we're going to do next. And they made each other look so good in this match. This is what you want from professional wrestling. So maybe some people are going to think I'm off base starting off with this match, but I absolutely love this one. I thought it was something really special. Just good stuff, man. I love the organic babyface turn of Macho Man. The chaos after the match.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Good stuff here.
It was great. I actually agree with you. I mean, I wouldn't list it as one of my greatest moments, but I see why you did. It definitely was looking into the future, seeing what kind of guy Bret Hart would be in a singles run, because he was in the tag team recently, World Tag Team Champions with Jim Neidhart, would eventually become tag team champions again 3 years later. And then he would start his official singles run. But this was a little peek into the future, man. Like, Macho Man, one of the greatest in the world at that time, as you said, former Intercontinental Champion on his way to being world champion against Bret Hart, a definite tag team guy, but with a little bit of a, you know, you could see him separating himself from Jim Neidhart as it pertains to his technical expertise. So I could see why you would say that. Really cool, really cool. Kind of like present meets the future. And we all know what Randy Savage, God rest his soul, turned out to be one of the greatest to ever live, as well as Bret Hart. He turned out to be one of the greatest to ever live. So you had two of the greatest of all time, before they were the greatest of all time, fighting each other on Saturday night's main event, November 11th, 1987. Very cool choice, Conrad. All right, I'm gonna cheat a little bit, man. I'm gonna cheat a little bit because moments usually kind of come down to what it is, a moment. But I'm gonna say the entire my first moment is the entire combined effort of the production of the entire show of Saturday night's main event, April 28th, 1990. Why is that? Well, we had just come off of WrestleMania 6. Hogan had just lost the title, and the Ultimate Warrior was basically now the new world champion. And we're looking now into a time where Hogan is probably going to be transitioning to the second tier guy. They wanted to strap, as my esteemed colleague Conrad said, the rocket to somebody's back, and that rocket was going to be attached to the Warrior's back. I love Saturday night's main event, April 28th, 1990, from Austin, Texas, because it was basically a situation where the entire show was a complete foreshadowing of things to come. What am I talking about? Well, the night opened up with Hulk Hogan versus Mr. Perfect with the Genius in his corner. That night, basically, for those two guys, it was Mr. Perfect kind of basically going up against the number one guy in the industry unofficially now that Warrior was champion to kind of show the world what he can do, kind of tapping into that little rivalry they had a couple years prior where Perfect broke up the belt, but nothing ever came of it. Going up against Hogan, where everybody's saying, basically, you know what, Hogan's not the guy anymore, but not so fast. Not so fast. Don't forget about him, because he's still here. He lost the title, but Hogan is still here. In the second match, you had Earthquake versus Hillbilly Jim, where he basically squashes Hillbilly Jim. That was foreshadowing of things to come, as he would eventually go into a rivalry with Hogan in SummerSlam 1990. You had Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart going up against Jannetty and Michaels. The Rockers versus the Hart Foundation. It went to a double DQ. The significance of that is that Demolition interfered. Demolition interfered. That would be the precipice of their eventual heel turn, which would lead to Crush joining the team and them losing the tag team titles to them, Hart Foundation, in SummerSlam 1990. You also had the Warriors' first title defense against Haku. How is that a foreshadowing? Well, Haku is a member of the Heenan family. Immediately after Haku lost, which was predictable, they go to the backstage area. They have an interview with Bobby the Brain Heenan. And Bobby the Brain Heenan tells Sean Mooney, hey, we lost tonight, but me and Ravishing Rick Rude were scouting this match. And Sean Mooney interrupts and says, what do you mean, Ravishing Rick Rude? What does he have to do with this? Well, what it would have to do with is that he would defend the title against the Ultimate Warrior. The Warrior would defend the title against Ravishing Rick Rude that summer in a steel cage at SummerSlam. And then you had the Big Boss Man in a rematch against Akeem with the Dr. Style Slick in his corner, where he won by disqualification. That was a foreshadowing of things to come for the Boss Man, basically his biggest singles run ever, which would be his time from 1990 to 1991. So I say all that to say this, April 28th, 1990, as a combined show, I felt was well done, well put together, very theatric, and very much a foreshadowing of things to come. Am I making sense, Conrad?
Absolutely. That is actually a very good show to bring up for all the reasons that you have listed, the foreshadowing and everything that was coming up. There were a lot of changes during that time period, too, where you're bringing it up. It's kind of like, let's start seeing what some of these other guys have. Yes. They seem to move away from, like, the DiBiases, the Andres, and they started going with, well, who does Warrior work well with? Mr. Perfect. He works well with Ravishing Rick Rude.
Right.
And they went to just a completely different time period. It felt nice to see some different people in the main event scene and any of the title pictures.
Awesome, awesome. So I'm glad we agree, because I knew I was cheating a little bit, man. I'm going to pick a whole show as a moment, but I felt like that whole show as a combination of things was very important for the year 1990. I think that show set the stage for the rest of the year. It really did. So, I mean, even more than WrestleMania did, and I know that sounds really crazy, but okay, Warrior won the title at WrestleMania 6. Okay, but now what? Okay, well, we're going to immediately start setting up for him versus Ravishing Rick Rude. Hogan lost the title at WrestleMania 6. What do we do with Hogan? Well, let's remind the world that Hogan's still here. Let's remind the world that Hogan's still going to be in your face. Let's remind the world that Mr. Perfect is somebody that's on the rise, who eventually would become Intercontinental Champion a couple of months later. You know, I thought it was a really, really good job by WWE at that time, as they basically gave us a glimpse into the future. Now, Conrad, talk to us about your next favorite moment.
This is another one where you kind of get a glimpse into the future, but this future is a little bit different.
Okay.
We have to go to this one's on my mom's birthday. Nice. It was crazy when I was doing the research for this.
Nice.
November 14th. She was born way before this, though. 1992.
Uh-oh.
About the Intercontinental Championship. Uh-oh. Changed my life as a fan.
I should have known this was coming.
We got the heartbreak kid, Shawn Michaels, getting a huge opportunity to face off against the British Bulldog. Yes, sir. Now, it's not Shawn's first chance at the Intercontinental title. Mm-hmm. He had some opportunities against Bret, couldn't seal the deal. But he's getting a shot against the British Bulldog. And during this time period, Bulldog's been champ for a little bit now.
Right.
But Shawn Michaels is on the rise. And I was already a fan of Shawn since he turned on Marty Jannetty. And I'm like, yes, this has got to be Shawn's opportunity.
Right.
But I'm in the back of my head as a wrestling fan, Bulldog just won the belt. They don't do quick title changes like that. But as a fan, you always held it in your heart like, but maybe tonight's the night. So we're sitting up here and you get to watch this athletic contest between Shawn Michaels and the British Bulldog. Now, Shawn's not as polished as he becomes later on. And this match does get a little sloppy because during this time period, Shawn Michaels was using the teardrop suplex as a finisher. And the super kick was a setup move.
Right.
And it kind of boggles your mind what they were thinking back then until Pat Patterson finally just told them, like, use the super kick. It looks better.
Thank God. Like, please.
Yes. So the British Bulldog, and by the way, this is my favorite version of the British Bulldog. Mm-hmm. Anytime I see like the video games and they got him with the short hair, I'm like, yo, give me Bulldog with the braids and the beads, man.
There you go.
That was when he was at his peak. This is a good back and forth contest where Shawn Michaels, the psychology of it is Shawn's working Bulldog's back to set up for the teardrop suplex or whatever. And the turnbuckle pad eventually comes off. Mm-hmm. Hebner, whichever one it is, doesn't realize that Shawn has knocked this off for half the match and it's laying there. And eventually, Bulldog goes colliding right into it. And that's going to be part of the ending of the match. They go up for a double suplex, and I'll never forget it. I'm watching, I'm like, oh man, Shawn's going to lose if he hits this move right here. And they're kind of punching each other up there. And when Bulldog goes for the suplex, his back kind of gives out, and Shawn falls on top of the British Bulldog. One, two, three. Bobby Heenan is ecstatic on commentary. No one else in the arena can believe it. You hear the boos coming up, and I'm probably the only kid I felt like at the time cheering at home. you hear Shawn's music with Sherry, and Shawn Michaels becomes the Intercontinental Champion for the very first time. An exposed turnbuckle gives Shawn the unfair advantage to beat the British Bulldog. I think it's a classic match and a great story. And it meant just a lot to me to see Shawn win his first belt because, like I said, going in, I'm like, people have long title reigns during these time periods. I'm like, Bulldog's going to hold that belt at least until the Survivor Series, the Royal Rumble or something.
Makes sense.
But no, they flipped the script on him, and later we would find out the real reason why. And I'll let you decide if you want to talk about why he lost it, but Shawn Michaels becomes the champion, and it's just crazy to see everything being built around him. And Bret just got the WWF title, so two of my favorites in the company are champions. And it would just be a kind of another story to tell you, this is what you're looking at, and in 5 years from now, this could be one of the biggest matches you see on a WrestleMania.
Absolutely. We could go into a little bit. Like, I go into it with a little bit of hesitance because I'm not 100% sure of the whole situation, but I am somewhat privy to it. Bulldog was leaving the company, I understand, correct? Or what, it was something in reference to steroids performance-enhancing drugs?
Bulldog and Warrior got popped for steroids, and this is kind of the beginning of the steroid scandal.
Okay.
During all of it, and they got in trouble for it. So this is before Hogan and Vince got into all their turmoil. They didn't want these big guys as champions at the time. So Flair had his run. Flair wants to leave and go back to WCW, so Hart gets the belt. Bulldog just got popped, and they got to let him go. So Bulldog's got to drop the belt to someone. They chose Shawn Michaels as the guy to run with.
Fair enough.
It was just something different during that time. And is that how it exactly went down? No, but this is based on rumors that people have said for years. Several people have said this, that's why it happened. So it's just an interesting thing to think about why Bulldog lost the belt, because maybe he wouldn't have lost it as fast.
Maybe it wouldn't have lost it, but you know, everything happens for a reason. HBK deserved the chance to be Intercontinental champion. But at the same time, if Bulldog had held on to it, who knows what 1993 would have looked like. Man, I think about 93 a lot, man. Well, I think about 93 and what could have been a lot.
You know what else, though, Sean? This really messed up one of the first non-WrestleMania pay-per-views I ordered. And this is why I remember it. It was the Survivor Series 1992. I remember Kamala versus The Undertaker. I think it was a casket match.
Yes, it was.
They were also supposed to have that match with Ric Flair and Razor Ramon while he was finishing up his contract versus Macho Man Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior, but remember it got changed to Mr. Perfect. They had to have Perfect Flip.
Yep.
Like, that was all because of what happened with Bulldog. And then Shawn ended up having to face, so they had a champion versus champion match. They usually didn't do stuff like that.
They didn't. And, you know, imagine we could see in the future, like 5 years later at the same event, Survivor Series, what would happen between HBK and Bret Hart. But I often wonder what 1993 would have looked like. I hate to harp on this, but then again, I don't, because I really do want to talk about it for a couple seconds. 93, WrestleMania 9, listen to that in the archives, we break that down. One of the worst pay-per-views of all time, at least one of the worst WrestleManias. And it could have had Flair. It could have had the Bulldog. It could have had the Ultimate Warrior. We're talking about just months, just a couple of months prior. These guys were on your roster, and fast forward 3 months, 4 months later, and we have, you know, Hogan stealing titles at the end of pay-per-views. Like, it's crazy.
Doink and Crush.
Oh, God, don't even. I was trying to avoid that one, but of course you want to bring it up. But yes, it was horrible. So, I mean, just imagine what 93 could have looked like. Maybe things had just changed a little bit, but that's the nature of the business, right?
Yeah.
All right, so there we go. Let's move on to our next moment on my side. This is from the 3rd of January, 1987. We all know what happened in March of 87. Hogan would face Andre in what many consider to be the greatest match of all time. Obviously not the greatest match of all time in the ring, but I'm talking about the greatest, most nostalgic match of all time, historical value, whatever the case may be. But a couple months before that, Hogan was in a very heated rivalry with a man by the name of Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. And Mr. Wonderful would come as close as any human being can come to being world champion in the Hulk Hogan era of the mid to late 1980s. Because in this match, it was a steel cage match for the WWE Championship. And in this match, Mr. Wonderful and Hogan beat each other's brains out. A lot of rumor and innuendo that they did not like each other off screen. But I'll tell you what, it was a great match. Heenan was in rare form outside the ring, jumping up on the cage, bothering the referee. But the thing that makes this match stand out, Hogan and Wonderful hit the floor at the same time. They hit the floor at the same time going over the cage. One referee raises Mr. Wonderful's hand, one referee raises Hulk Hogan's hand, and for a brief second, Conrad, for a brief second, we think that we have a new World Wrestling Federation champion. It was not to be. Hogan would win the match once the match restarted, but a very well-done, well-timed story. What do you think about it?
That was back when those kinds of things worked. Yes. I know sometimes in wrestling, they go back to the well. And you got to wait a long time so it's well out of people's minds before you do certain things again.
Exactly.
Whether it be the title on the line in the Royal Rumble, which we saw a couple years ago, and they never did it since, what was it, 92?
92.
You talk about this steel cage match. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, I don't know for a lot of people what they knew of him, but he was a big deal.
Yes, he was.
Before they had WrestleMania 3, like, Mr. Wonderful was that guy, and he ended up training a lot of people in WCW, and I know that's what a lot of people know him as what was the tag team with Paul Roma, Pretty and Wonderful?
Pretty Wonderful, baby. With the tagged up with the greatest tag team wrestler of all time, Paul Roma.
So there were so many things that people don't know about Mr. Wonderful, and I think they really did consider putting the title on him. Like, if Hogan wasn't around, I could have saw Mr. Wonderful as the champion if there was no Hogan there. But Hogan was the guy, man. You couldn't turn away from him at that point. If the dude's selling shirts like that, sorry, it ain't happening, Mr. Wonderful.
But I mean, cool concept about having them hit the ground at the same time, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting into. Yeah. The finish of it was something very different. And I'm sure they had to practice that a lot because they were on the opposite sides of the cage. Mm-hmm. And it just worked out beautifully. It's one of those things when you would play with your action figures and you're like, I wonder what would happen if this happened.
No doubt.
And you could probably watch some kids do stuff like that today. And it's like, oh, that's an interesting concept. They should try and do that in the match. And both guys' feet hit at the same time, but there was only one result. Hogan had to get the W here.
Hogan must pose, right? But I'll tell you what, man. When you look back in hindsight, like you just said about Mr. Wonderful Paul Roma, Mr. Wonderful's most impressive moment in WWE happened to be this rivalry with Hogan. But it could have been bigger because I don't know if you've heard this. You being a wrestling historian, I'm sure you have. Paul Roma, oh my God. Paul Orndorff was the replacement for Andre if Andre did not make it to WrestleMania 3. Did you know that?
I have not heard that story.
Yes, Paul Roma was the backup plan because a lot of people wonder, and even as I talk to you now, I'm sure it might pop into your head, why was Paul Orndorff not on WrestleMania 3? He never made that show, but he was still under contract. And according to folklore and rumor and innuendo and everyone put it, Paul Orndorff was the guy behind the scenes who was going to take Andre's place if Andre was not able to recover from back surgery in time for the match.
I believe it, though. That wouldn't have been a bad match either, though. That's the thing I don't think a lot of people get. Paul Orndorff, if you've never seen him back during this time, he looked like he was chiseled out of stone. But in the 80s, oh, no, you wouldn't have messed with this dude. I'm telling you. This dude looked like he could have snapped you in half with just his bare hands. And Paul Orndorff, rumor has it, he's a tough dude, too.
He is. He is. I've heard the same thing. They tried that little stretch run with him when he was a face and him and Hogan were cool. That didn't last long. I'm glad it didn't because Paul Roma. I keep thinking about Paul Roma. Why? Because Power and Glory was the greatest team of all time. Anyway, Paul Orndorff, such a great run. Obviously, WrestleMania 1, obviously, WrestleMania 2. And then, you know, WrestleMania 3 just didn't make the show. But he was the backup for Andre if Andre did not reach the match due to back surgery. So that's a little fun fact for you guys, man. So with that being said, Conrad, it's on you, brother.
I'm glad you brought up WrestleMania 3.
Uh-oh.
Because we got to go back in time. Yo, this is freaky, dude. 2 days before my first birthday.
All these birthdays. What's going on?
I'm just saying all these events take place like right before them, and I never realized the dates of them until I started doing the research for this.
Nice.
Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, February 5th, 1988.
Yes, sir.
Now, this rivalry was huge back then. A lot of people really believed that Andre was going to win the belt at WrestleMania 3. They thought he was an unstoppable force. This is back when people absolutely were like, the big guy has to win because that's believable.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the ideas come from for this today. And we get a rematch between Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. Andre the Giant is basically a henchman at this point for the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, who has Virgil by his side, hashtag meat sauce. And shout out to Virgil, too, for that comment. When Chris Jericho lost his belt,
facts.
That just had me cracking up. If I was watching the belt for you, this would have never happened.
That's funny stuff, yes.
But we get back into this match. So Andre is there to basically win the belt for the Million Dollar Man, which seems like the dirtiest way ever to get a title, but they're heels, right?
Yes.
So this is a big rematch, and everybody's hoping for those WrestleMania moments, and they think maybe this is going to be the end of the rivalry here. And I have to tip my hat to everybody involved in this angle from the WWF. Like, they did this perfect. And if a lot of you ever wanted to look this up, it's the original Twin Magic.
Yes, yes.
Hebner has a brother who is a twin named Dave Hebner. And during this match, Hogan went for a body slam. And correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, Sean. Andre falls on top of Hogan. You see the one, the two. Hogan's shoulders up, but Andre's girth is so big, that the ref says he didn't see it. He counts to three. Andre the Giant becomes the WWF Tag Team Champion, as he says.
Oh, my God. Why? I don't understand why he said that. My God.
Andre was probably like, what territory am I in tonight? Exactly. How much wine did I just have? I don't care.
Exactly.
So Andre gets the three count. He becomes the WWF Champion. And Hogan sees that another Hedner comes out. Oh, my goodness. The look on Hogan's face and the fans are like, what is going on? Why are there two referees out here? And the storyline is that they screwed him over with, what was it, facial reconstruction surgery?
It was facial reconstruction or whatever you want to call it, plastic surgery, something like that.
You guys had me until you started getting ridiculous.
Exactly, right? To say.
He was like, I saw both of them with my two eyes, brother. And Hogan ended up beating up, I think it was Earl, who was supposed to be the dirty one.
Yes.
And Earl ends up taking some bump from Hogan because he is angry, and Hogan was always really a heel. And Andre basically forfeits the title over to the Million Dollar Man. So you'll see pictures with Andre holding it up, but eventually he puts the title around the waist of the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. What does this all lead to? This creates controversy, setting up WrestleMania IV's big tournament. And I know a lot of people don't like that show, but I always see the fondness of that show because of this moment here. And it's really great. And this is exactly what you talked about in the beginning, Sean, how these great moments were set up by these shows. These shows had a purpose.
Most definitely.
And it really led up to WrestleMania and made it a must-see event.
Most definitely. I mean, oh my goodness. One of the most historically significant moments in the history of the business. And I kid you not, it's something I watch probably once a month. It really takes me back to like what really makes this this business what we love so much, because it was so well done. It was so well thought out. The novice would not have known that Hogan was going off the scene to do the movie. But even if we had known, looking back in hindsight, we knew that Hogan was going off to do No Holds Barred. But it was so good. Like, okay, Hogan's going to drop the title to go do a movie. Okay. But the way they did it, and then he goes to WrestleMania, and you think, well, Hogan can't lose at WrestleMania, but they find a way to do the double disqualification and make it interesting. Vince and his staff back then really knew what they were doing, Conrad.
Yeah, I think it was just him, Bruce, and Pat, right?
There you go. Unbelievable. One of the most historically significant moments of all time. Well, that is one of the most historically significant moments of all time, and it happened to be on the main event. Here's another historically significant moment as it pertains to the history, the numbers, the statistics of the main event, or Saturday night's main event. And that is from July 18th, 1989. Really well done. The Brainbusters were primed and ready to become basically the best team in the business. They were obviously the Four Horsemen coming from their WCW days. They were tremendously talented. Arn was great. Tully was great. Bobby the Brain being in their corner made all the sense in the world. And they defeat the mighty Demolition. What do you think about this moment?
Oh, such a great one. This was actually probably, if I had a list of honorable mentions, this one was on there.
Nice.
Just great tag team wrestling. Something that I like yearn for in today's WWF product, where there's a big focus on the tag division. And shout out to the Brainbusters, because if you watched AEW's All Out, these guys are still going today, and they still have something to offer the business.
Facts.
Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, one of the most underappreciated tag teams. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Because of their run being so short, I think so.
Yeah, they were just a great team, and I can't say anything really bad about them, man. Absolutely love this match, though.
It was tremendous, and it definitely put them on the map. Unfortunately, due to contract disputes, Arn wanting to go back to WCW, Tully wanting to go back to WCW, Tully getting in trouble for allegedly cocaine or whatever the situation was. They were gone by Survivor Series of that same year. But, man, they were for that stretch, late 88 through, I'd say, the summer of 89, they were really, really good. And, of course, they were good anyway because they were horsemen. And they'd already made a name for themselves. But their WWE run is very much underrated. And, you know, the first tag team title change in the history of Saturday night's main event. Go ahead.
You know another match they had that was really good too? That match with the Rockers, that was two out of three falls.
Yes.
That wasn't bad either.
that would have, and it would have been great to see that continue too. I guess they felt like they reached the zenith of that particular rivalry, but that goes back to another moment, not on my list, but imagine if the Rockers actually became World Tag Team Champions sooner and that rivalry was for the championship. How cool would that have been?
That would have been super dope, man. Ah, man.
Just, I mean, there's so many what ifs. Like, you know, I've talked to you about my theory, and I've talked on my show about my theory about how the Mega Powers should have been World Tag Team Champions and how that would have changed history. Or, you know, if Hogan had never won the title at WrestleMania 9, how that would have changed. There's so many moments we can go back and, you know, cherry pick, but for the most part, they got it right, you know?
Yeah, you can't be too mad at that.
Exactly. So, are we already at moment number 4 for you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I did reverse countdown. So, yeah, this is like 2 for me.
Nice. Let's hit it. Let's do it.
As far as moment goes, you have to go back to one of the classics with Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior brawling. I cannot figure out the exact date of when this one aired. And do you remember the initial showing of the beef between Hogan and Warrior? I think this is the first time we see them touch. That's not in like a Royal Rumble-esque
type match. Oh my goodness. It was
the Magic is Perfect?
Yeah, it was Perfect and the Genius were their opponents.
Yeah. Man, they tore it up for this.
Yes.
And the beauty of it is if people watch how the arena explodes, it makes it so much better. Yes. Like, you don't get those kind of pops today that people just love. They love to just go nuts for that type of match. I don't know, man. It's just a special moment to me because those were the two biggest names in pro wrestling. I'm sorry, and this happened on 1/27/1990.
Yes.
They just exploded, man. And you thought maybe Mr. Perfect and the Genius would do something here, but it was the classic kind of like they bumped into each other and someone clubbed the other guy. So can you blame them?
Right.
You were in there brawling. Your guy bumped into you. You didn't look because you're a single star. It makes sense. And it just led to that big face-off, and you were like, man, this is going to be a big match. And they've never really done babyface versus babyface at that time.
Let's dig a little deeper on that moment because that was a very historically significant moment. But there's something that kind of sticks out in my mind that I want to discuss with you, and I think the fans would agree that this is kind of like a cool little tidbit to think about as you look back in history. Chattanooga, Tennessee, the UTC Arena is where this took place. But it actually took place on January 3rd. It aired on the 27th, but it took place on January 3rd. Now, I bring that up to say this. That little trip and fall, that little, you know, run-in situation where Hogan and Warrior faced off at the Royal Rumble happened, I want to say, mid to late January. It definitely was before the 3rd. It wasn't before the 3rd. It wasn't the 2nd or the 1st. So it obviously happened after this show was taped. My question to you is this. If you're a fan in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the UTC Arena on January 3rd, 1990, the Royal Rumble has not happened yet. There has never been any interaction between Hogan and the Warrior. And then they face off after this little problem they had with Perfect and the Genius. What are you thinking sitting in that crowd? Hogan, Warrior, never had a problem, never had a beef, never touched in the ring ever in history. Again, this is just for those 20,000 in Chattanooga. What are you thinking?
You're thinking this has to be the coolest moment, in my opinion.
I'm confused. If I'm in Chattanooga before I'm painting a picture for all the fans out there because I know you get it, Conrad. It's January 3rd. The Royal Rumble, where Hogan and Warrior face off for the first time, has not happened yet. It happened by the time the show was aired, but it didn't happen by the time the show was live. So you're sitting in a crowd in Chattanooga, Tennessee on January 3rd, 1990. Hogan and Warrior are face to face. They're shoving each other. Are you not totally confused at this point?
I think you would be. for that time period as a casual, but I still feel like that's definitely like, yo, what is going on right here? So, like, I feel like something special would be happening if you saw two guys who are like the biggest baby faces. Obviously, the Intercontinental Champion is kind of like a rising star, and the WWF Champion are brawling. It's an interesting concept, and it's a good thing that you pointed out, number one, where it is, because I don't think today they would have done an angle like that there.
Exactly.
Because me being from Buffalo, I know how it feels to get a Buffalo show versus a New York City show.
Oh, okay. I feel
it. It hurts my soul. Like, you're from the city.
Yes.
So it hurts my soul when I watch a Madison Square Garden show. I'm like, oh, they get Triple H's comeback. I get Tori Wilson and the Hardy Boys versus, like,
oh my God.
You get what I'm saying? And it's no disrespect. I get
right.
it.
Right. I don't mean to laugh, but I know what you're trying to say.
Right. Like, I go to Raw and I'm like, this is what I get. And I'm a big wrestling fan, just like anyone from New York City. So it hurt me sometimes when I go to the show that I'm like, and this is why I don't show up to all of these.
Yeah, yeah.
But seeing that moment, I don't know. I think I would have felt like it was so cool back then just to see the top two guys go at it versus the classic. Like, they could have easily went to WrestleMania with this match and just been like, we're not having our top two faces fight each other. Let's just put Perfect and Genius in there against them. They can have a good match with them. People will eat it up.
Makes
they didn't go that route. So I give them credit for putting their necks on the line a little bit by saying, like, hey, let's do this.
No doubt. No doubt. I feel you. I feel you 100%. All right, so we're looking. It's my fourth moment coming up now, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going February of 1990. We're going to the Joe Louis Arena, and we're talking about Detroit, Michigan, and we're talking about Hulk Hogan defending the WWE Championship against his former Mega Power partner, Macho Man, Macho King at this point, Randy Savage, and the guest referee is the new heavyweight champion of the world, James Buster Douglas. Just a couple of weeks beforehand, it was supposed to be Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was signed. Mike Tyson was sealed, but he certainly was not delivered on that night because he decided that he was not going to show up because he got beat. The world was shocked in Tokyo, Japan, when James Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson for the heavyweight boxing championship of the world. And it was epic, unbelievable. And then James Buster Douglas all of a sudden is inserted into this role. And not only was he inserted into this role at the last minute, but they put something together for him to be active and energetic in the match and throwing Sherry out of the ring and punching out Macho Man. And I mean, it was pretty awesome. A little deal after the match was over with Hogan and Savage turning his back on Douglas and then slapping Douglas in the face. It was really cool. One of my all-time favorite moments. Douglas, special referee for Macho King versus Hogan. What are your thoughts?
It's a great moment. It's one of those WWE or F, whatever you want to call them, has always kind of been known to wait too long for something, whether it be even like Seth Rollins' title run. Seth Rollins was the hottest babyface at last year's SummerSlam in 2018, and now in 2019 he's the champ,
right?
And it's kind of like, man, you shouldn't have did it a year ago.
Exactly.
Because it didn't strike while the iron's hot. But in this situation with celebrities, I feel like they have to strike when the iron's hot. Mike Tyson was kind of the out thing temporarily at this point.
Yes.
He got knocked out in this fight. We can get into that another time or on one of your boxing shows.
Yeah.
Buster Douglas was the big name. You had to put him in there because this would be his best run of his life. This would be his biggest, like, career moments. In the ring, outside of the ring. I believe he was on, like, Arsenio Hall. He was everywhere at the time, talking about him beating Mike Tyson. And you had to let – he was kind of like the underdog. And it was kind of cool to just see him parade around and tell everybody that he was happy for what he did. It was just a feel-good moment. So he was definitely the babyface in all of this. And the interaction with Macho Man and everything else, this was really great. But I know that you're a what-if man. Don't you just always wonder, what if Mike Tyson was the one involved? Would this have been better or would it have been worse?
I'm going to take it a step further, my brother. I'm going to take it a step further and say that Mike Tyson still should have been in that role.
Do you think they could have put him across the ring?
I think Mike Tyson should have been in Macho Man's corner and Douglas should have been in Hogan's corner, or they could have had dual referees. I think it could have been not one of the greatest moments in Saturday Night / the main event history. That could have been one of the greatest moments in television history. You give me a recently defeated Mike Tyson, who lost the title in shocking fashion, as the special referee of Macho King's Choice, going up against Hulk Hogan, Ultra Babyface, again, and with his referee of choice, super babyfacey kind of nice guy, new world champion Buster Douglas. You give me one of those four elements, and we're talking about one of the greatest moments in television history.
Well, how would you book the interaction between those? So I have to ask you this. This is kind of...
Okay, well, I definitely would have a face-off between Tyson and Douglas. That's a definite.
Mm-hmm.
Because the situation is so fresh where it was a real-life knockout and a real-life fight, there would always be that element. Of course, you'd have to have a conversation with Mike Tyson and Douglas. Hey, guys, this is... You know, this is staged. We're not going to really fight out there. If you make sure that you're comfortable with this and that you believe everything is going to be okay, you have them face off in the ring and you have them almost come to blows and you have them almost have a rematch right there in a WWE ring. And then right when it's about to pop off, you know, somehow it gets broken up or whatever the case may be, the pretty typical tease kind of a deal. But you put those two in the ring together, and you have a face-off, and you have tempers flaring, and they're nose-to-nose, and in the background of that same still picture, you have the Macho King and Hulk Hogan standing right beside them? I mean, give me a more iconic photo or more iconic moment other than maybe Tyson standing between Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And what was the date for this?
This is February 23rd, 1990.
Could you imagine going into that? Now, I know that they already had their match probably lined up for what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But could you imagine?
Because honestly, bro, I think that everything that Douglas did would have been what Tyson did.
Could you imagine if they had that set up the same way you just explained, though, but the main event for WrestleMania could have been Hulk Hogan and Buster Douglas versus the Macho Man and Mike Tyson.
That
would have been box office money.
Oh, my God. They could have printed money off of that. I'm thinking about that. As you say it, I kid you not, I got legit kayfabe, goosebumps. I kid you not. That would have been unbelievable. That would have been one of the greatest moments in sports history. Forget sports entertainment. I kid you not.
Yeah, that would have been super dope.
Oh, man. I don't know if Tyson backed out or if WWE changed their mind. I hope for WWE's sake, looking back historically, that WWE made the change because Tyson backed out. Because if Tyson was still willing to do it, oh, my God. Unbelievable.
I think Bruce Pritchard and Conrad talk about it at one point. I don't remember why. I feel like I've heard Bruce Pritchard talk about it. And I want to say it was something like Tyson backed out or his management team didn't want to do it anymore after that.
I mean, that's possible, and that does make the most sense. I hope that's the case, because if they had a chance to basically lay that golden egg by having Tyson and Douglas, that would have been a major mistake if they turned it down. I'm assuming Tyson backed out. I believe that makes the most sense. But the only reason I'm a little hesitant to believe that with 100% of surety, I'm probably at about 80%, is because Tyson came off the scandal of biting Holyfield in the ear, and it was only a few months later that he was a special referee for Austin versus Michaels. So it's not like Tyson was shy about making public appearances after a loss. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, but I think that the time periods were different back then.
Okay.
I think during the 90s, that was kind of like the Bill Clinton era, and mm-hmm. it was, you're running roughshod over everything. Like, you don't care about nothing. I felt like it was cool. Like, it was South Park. Everything else was happening. Controversy was cool back then. During this time period, it's kind of like, all right, stay away for a minute. This guy's got the shine. Let him rock out for now.
No doubt. Well, either way, I mean, obviously Tyson wasn't involved. It still was a great moment. But I'm not going to lie, I got legit goosebumps at the thought of what could have been. Now you're making me question my choice, because now when I think about the prospect of Tyson and Savage versus Hogan and Douglas, it makes the fact that Douglas was just the referee a little bit ho-hum, but it still was a great moment.
It was. That was another on my honorable mentions list.
Nice, nice. So we're going to your number one at this point, man. What do you got for us?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the people that you did, but we got to go back a little bit further.
Talk to me.
February 3rd, 1989.
Oh, my goodness.
Prime Time Special. Mm-mm. The main event showcase. The Mega Powers versus the Twin Towers. That's Boss Man and Akeem, if you guys didn't know. Now, I'm not going to do the entire match for you, because was the match great?
Right, exactly. All right. It was okay.
All right. Akeem grabs a beaten down Macho Man who was desperately looking for the tag and throws him out of the ring. Macho Man was thrown on top of Elizabeth. Now, when I'm saying thrown, he was legit thrown. Like, Elizabeth looked like she died.
Yes, she did. She looked like it, yep.
Yeah, because Macho Man landed right on top of her. She was so small and frail, and Savage was just so big and bulky at the time with his muscles. It was just like, oh, dang. And he's hurt, so he can't really tend to her. So she's knocked out unconscious, we'll say. And Hogan sees what happened, and he carries Miss Elizabeth to the back, to the medical area. Pause. I got to paint another picture. This goes back to the SummerSlam matches and everything else, where Hogan put Elizabeth up on Macho Man's shoulders, a little pat on the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Savage has been paying attention to all of this. And during all this, Savage has become kind of the paranoid champion at this point and wonder what's going on with this lady. So Miss Elizabeth is back there and revived. She tells Hogan to get back out there and help Macho Man. So Miss Elizabeth, the greatest manager, Hogan's like, all right, yes, ma'am, I'm going out there. They come out to beat up these two juggernauts for several minutes. Hogan comes out and beats the Twin Towers, what is perceived by everyone, kind of alone. Savage got the tag, and Hogan's here to save the day. And now it's time for Hogan Must Pose. After the match, though, Hogan doesn't pose. Hogan kind of goes right...
Wait. Hogan doesn't pose? Are you kidding me?
Not in this situation.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm going to say something real controversial in a second.
Okay.
So Hogan goes all the way to the back to check on Elizabeth. All
right.
Savage is already back there, too. Who was caught in his mid-tirade. And I'm sorry, Savage went to the back. He kind of left Hogan to check on her. And Savage is back there. They're yelling at each other, and he's had it. So Elizabeth's trying to stop them, like, guys, stop fighting. But she's laid out on a bed. She can't do anything. My favorite moment of all of this is Savage goes and grabs his WWF Championship, the Winged Eagle that's sitting right behind me now, folds that bad boy up and lets Hogan have it right upside of him.
Yes, he did.
And Hogan falls over on all of his medical equipment. I don't know why scaffolds and stuff were out. That's what it looked like it was. Hogan knocks all of that over, and Savage turns on him and starts pounding on him. There is a big fight that explodes between them. We get some people backstage who come out and try to help, and everything is just crazy, and Savage has turned heel on Hulk Hogan. This was the end of their partnership, which would lead to the match at WrestleMania 5. Now, with all of me saying that, what's the controversial moment I'm going to say? I'm going to say that I still believe in pro wrestling history that most people should have this in a top 5, even top 10, I'll say. But it should be in a top 5 best storylines ever in pro wrestling.
Oh, without question.
I think it's so well written that you really can't say anything bad about it.
Without question. It's one of the greatest moments in history. And I mean, I appreciate this moment so much for the way it was done. Little bit of, you know, botchery in the you know, production. If you really dig far enough to see, like, Hogan talking to the producer and Beefcake jumping in the shot before he was supposed to. But X all that out, one of the greatest situations of all time.
Yeah, it was just such a good moment that I think all fans should pay attention to. And is this a situation where didn't Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels kind of get beat down afterwards too?
Not not beat down. See, look.
Not beat down, but here's the thing. It was so weird to see those two guys, particularly in that shot, and going back to what I was saying in the beginning.
Hindsight being 2020, it's very ironic that during Hogan's backstage, you know, stalking of Savage, that he runs into Michaels, ironically, with the future that they would have together, and Bret Hart, ironically, with the future that they have together. That is very ironic, yes.
Yeah, I just thought that was a little another tidbit we could add in there with the production.
A little more foreshadowing about maybe 10 or 15 years later.
Pro wrestling, baby.
I love it. You know what, brother? I'm looking for Savage now, but I'll see you in 15 years at SummerSlam. And Brett, in about 4 years, I'm going to rob you of your championship run, brother. But right now, I'm looking for Savage. That's funny. Oh, my God. That's fun. We know what? We should do, like, a funny storyline deal where, like, we think about, like, these weird interactions that people have had. And then, like, on a serious note, that was a joke. But on a serious note, like, Michaels and Bret Hart at Survivor Series 92 compared to Michaels and Bret Hart in 97.
That's true, man. It's everything comes back sometimes, and that's what's so funny about pro wrestling. It's such a like foreshadowing. I don't want to compare it to Shakespeare and is wrestling performance art. I don't want to get into all that right now for an argument, but it's so weird how everything foreshadows, and sometimes it just works out perfectly.
It does. Well, look, I'm not gonna lie. I want to kick you off my show because you stole my number one moment, but. That means great minds think alike, so I guess I'm going to let you stay. My number one moment in Saturday Night, WWE Saturday Night Main Event / Main Event history is Mega Powers versus Twin Towers. So, kind of stole that from me, but I'm glad you stole it from me because it just proves once again that it is one of the greatest moments of all time, and I'm definitely in agreement with you 100%. Hogan, Savage, Elizabeth, infidelity, drama, combined with athleticism, combined with the X-Factor. By the way, nobody could have played those roles of villains in that situation better than Boss Man Akeem and Slick. That was also very well done in the choice of who the adversary were. That was really smart as well. I mean, backstage moments, you know, looking back in hindsight being 2020 with like the little things, like you said, Hogan with the little touch here, the little glimpse there, Savage with the side eye, that little 2 second moment at SummerSlam where Savage looked like he might have been upset, but then it goes away real quick. And that moment that he was upset at Survivor Series lasted a little longer. The moment it lasted at Royal Rumble a little longer than that. Awesome. Completely awesome. And it all came to a conclusion at the main event on February 3rd, 1990. I mean, 1989. I could not agree with you more, Conrad.
Yes, it's a great moment, man.
Unbelievable.
Where does it rank in storyline for you, though? I mean, do you honestly believe it's a top 5, top 10?
Oh, I think it's to use one of my favorite wrestling terms in 2019, I think it's undisputed that it's one of the top 5 moments of all time. Top 5 storylines of all time. I have a little bit of difficulty putting it above Andre, Hogan, the saga that took place leading into WrestleMania 4. That's the only thing that I think can rival that.
It could be. I just think there's no way you don't put this in here. The thought, the detail, and the time it took to tell the story is a thing of beauty. And if you guys ever go back, if you're younger and you're listening to this, go back and watch this. And this is the payoff you can get if you have long-term storytelling. And sometimes it's well worth it. It makes it more worth it in the end. The problem is I think wrestling fans know so much today that it's like, all right, let's get to the point. Because I've heard about it now for 6 months. Nobody was thinking like that back then. You were just like waiting for it. Like, all right, where's the payoff?
And to your point, we should go back and watch. And you should go back and just study this thing. Because the genius behind it, you would have never known if you weren't looking for it, that Savage had a problem at SummerSlam. But when you look back at SummerSlam 88 and you see Savage celebrating on the ropes And you see Jesse Ventura stirring the pot, tapping Macho Man on the back and pointing and saying, hey, look what's going on behind your back. Macho Man, it wasn't any more than 5 seconds, Conrad. 5 seconds that Macho had that puzzled look on his face, and then he went into celebration mode. But that 5 seconds would set the stage for Survivor Series. It would set the stage for the Royal Rumble. It would set the stage for Hogan getting beat down by the Twin Towers and Savage coming out to save Hogan at the Saturday nights before this one we're talking about. But he didn't come out to help Hogan. He came out only to help Elizabeth. And then, obviously, the Mega Powers exploded in February of 1989. But you have to look for it. And to your point, thinking about this Daniel Bryan, you know, Roman Reigns kind of a deal. I don't know. I mean, I can't even. Maybe I shouldn't even have brought it up because I can't verbalize what I really feel right now. It's somewhere in the disgust area. I'll tell you that.
You don't like vehicle or manslaughter anymore?
Not since November of 1999. What am I talking about, Conrad?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
There you go.
Triple threat that I wanted to see.
There you go. And they ruined it because it was Rikishi, which was the dumbest crap ever. And then they had to throw in Triple H to make it make more sense. Oh, yeah. God help us.
Yeah. Oh.
But anyway, talk to us about, when you think back about Saturday night's main event, when you think about prime time on a Friday or Saturday night, and you think about wrestling, and you think about our age demographic, we were in the 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old range. Talk to us about your feeling about that kind of a prime time special and that time in your life.
Those prime time specials meant a lot. Like, you just went through the whole Mega Powers thing. I was going to take it even a step further when you were talking. It popped into my head that this actually even leads up to some stuff in 91.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You're right.
With Warrior Hogan. Like, it all came back into play, and that was the beauty thing. Like, to me, when I watch wrestling is its own world. Like, whatever I'm entrapped in right now, like, Undertaker, you are the dead man. I will believe in that no matter what. Like, when you sit up, I'm like, oh, it's the dead dude from when I was a kid. Like, if I hear the gong, I pop still.
That's right.
And I was just complaining, like, man, that Undertaker-Goldberg match was garbage. They should never put these two on. That Monday Night Raw happened, bong. I was like, yo, what's happening?
Exactly. It never gets old.
I was like, pump my brakes sometimes. Maybe I need to be quiet a little bit before I spout off saying something really stupid. And a lot of podcasters won't admit to that type of stuff. But to keep my integrity, I have to be honest. I popped, and I think that there's still some of the greatest characters. But going back into this being its own world, when you're a little kid, man, this is what I used to look forward to. My father used to work real late nights sometimes on a Friday or Saturday, so I wouldn't see him, or he'd be out doing something, business meetings, whatever. So I would watch these events, and whether if he was home, we'd watch them together, but if he wasn't, he expected me probably to stay up, and then he would ask me, hey, what happened between Papa Shango and Bret the Hitman Hart or whatever? He knew Bret Hart was beating Papa Shango, but right. he was just asking me because he knew I cared about it.
Yes.
And he was like, oh, was it a good show? And I'm like, yeah, this happened too, and they debuted this new dude named Skinner, and it was all right, you know, and you would just get into these own little worlds of it. But these were kind of special events at the end of the week as a kid that were kind of a treat. Like, yes, I'm off for the next couple of days. I don't have to worry about school. It feels so good to be away. And you get to share this little bit of joy. It just meant a lot to me as a kid. I don't know. This is before I was out dating people. I always call this stuff the time before I started, like, you know, going out on dates and everything else. It was my childhood, basically. Like, I used to sit at home on Saturday nights and watch wrestling, play video games, and hang out with my friends.
You know,
and then one day it all just went away, and you never thought about it again.
You're so right. You know, I to get a little nostalgic with you, Friday nights going into Saturdays was the most fun time as a young child. I mean, I'm talking about the whole experience of coming home from school, like you just said, knowing that there's no school tomorrow, no school on Sunday. I come from a church family. I still am a church person, so Sunday was about church. But Friday night going into Saturday, TGIF on Friday on ABC. I think it was Family Matters and Mr. Belvedere and Boy Meets World. And I mean, it was unbelievable. And then the Saturday morning cartoons and then WWF Superstars. And it was awesome. And then when you knew that WWF Superstars was coming on at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock noon, and then you also know that this special was coming up Saturday night. So, like, they would really make, I mean, of course, we know these things are pre-taped now, but back in the day, you thought, oh my God, how are they going to get from one arena on one side of the country at 12 noon and get all the way to this next arena 5 hours later? How are they going to pull that off? Of course, that's being kids. But it was like a full day of anticipation, a full day of excitement, and it was almost pay-per-view quality in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like you said, it was similar to Clash of the Champions. They remember on Saturday nights too at 6:05. If you could watch it, TBS, you knew Saturday nights WCW wrestling was coming on too. You were going to get some good matches on there, whether it be a Ric Flair versus Brian Pillman.
Right.
Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas team up to face the Hollywood Blondes. William Regal defends the television title against Arn Anderson or beautiful Bobby Eaton. You always had some good wrestling on Saturdays that you could watch. And that was the format back then when we were kids. It was lovely. And in between all that, you were watching Bobby's World, X-Men. Yes, dude. I was into all of that stuff. That was how I spent my Saturdays. And, you know, eventually your mama was going to tell you, all right, boys, time to start cleaning. You get your TV on.
That's right.
And I'm like, all right, here we go.
Yep.
So it was just so cool, man. It's really nostalgic, like you said, to look back on that.
And then, you know, now we have bills and kids and, you know, everything changes. But I guess that's the beauty of being, you know, a father, the beauty of being an adult is now we get to take that energy and put it into our children to the point where now we can be like, hey, you know what? I hope that they can experience the same things that we did. Because Saturday mornings, even, I mean, just talking about it now, it just brings a smile to my face about how cool it was to be a kid back then and how cool it was to be a wrestling fan back then. And to your point, all the way back at the beginning of the show about how we have this kind of like renaissance of wrestling that's on the horizon this fall, I'm getting excited again, Conrad.
Yeah, and to your younger listeners, I want to point this out one more time again. You brought it up too, and this is for the overall point, but wrestling grew up with us. I grew up in the 80s where it was all about the kids and the cartoony stuff. And when this stuff started to go away, once they stopped doing the Saturday night's main events for a little bit, it went away until 2006, but growing up, man, the Attitude Era happened, and I was starting to become like a preteen, and I thought that was some of the coolest stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah, give him the crotch chop, bro. And you would watch all that stuff, and you would grow up with it. And I think it's the same thing as an adult. We are in a unique position in our age bracket to say, I call us the generation that never got anything that was what we originally thought we were going to get.
Right.
You know, as a kid, your parents were like, oh, don't worry, one day you're going to get a pension. Now we got 401ks. It's like everything was a big, like, haha.
Exactly.
You'll get a good job. College doesn't guarantee everybody everything. We're all starting to find that out slowly but surely, and we got these big student loan debts to pay off. And I know I'm getting all real life about
this. It makes sense. It all ties in, Conrad. It's real life. And it's one of these things where, like, us growing up in wrestling does correlate to us growing up, period. Because we went through these times, like you just said, it was all about the kids. Then it was all about sex, drugs, and violence. And now it's about kids again. But now they're trying to make it, like, about both. So it's kind of like this hybrid of emotion and storyline and characters. It really is a reflection of the different stages we go through in life.
And look at the technology, even how it's grown up with us. I read something too, like, we're the type of people, I can have a conversation with you, and look at how long we've been talking. And I know a lot of the younger people today, which I try to, if I'm in a supervisory spot at work, I try to take the time out to make sure that people know how important it is to interact and show care for someone who maybe thinks you don't care about them or you don't care about what you're doing. We are the same guys who will go buy a PlayStation 2, a PlayStation 4, but we also know how to use a rotary phone. We're in a very unique position to remember all of this stuff. We remember what it was like to have CD players, but we were also there for when they started coming out with iPods. And now look at the network. It's such a unique thing for kids to grow up upon today that I just think the future holds something very special, and I'm happy to be a part of the generation that we are. I'm thankful, so I thank God for that. And I'm happy that we did this show, man. It really brought a lot of things to light.
Well, I definitely, it seems like every time we do these shows, man, I'm not going to lie to you, we kind of branch off into some real life stuff. Somehow a Bret Hart, Yokozuna, Hogan conversation turns into a story about being compassionate to your fellow man and showing love and being forgiving. And now this show goes from talking about Saturday Night's Main Event to the natural progression of life and being thankful for life, health, and strength and for the blessings that God gives us. It's a good thing, man, and that's the reason why I enjoy having you here, and and that's the reason why EPW is doing so well. I'm very happy for your success, and I'm going to use that as a really cool segue to let you talk to the people about where they can find you.
You guys can find me if you type in at EPW Show on Twitter. I have a link tree. You can type it in. It's linktr.ee/EPW Show. And you guys can find all my links to everything. I just put up some new t-shirts on TeePublic. You'll find my Twitter, my YouTube channel, and everywhere where you can listen to my podcast. I am very thankful to do the show with Sean. I always have a blast when I come on here. And I'm very appreciative of our conversations and that we can actually reminisce about old school wrestling and I feel old, you know?
Now that's the only thing I disagree with you on, you know, and maybe that's me being a little bit naive and me being a little bit trying to hold on to my youth. We're in our 30s. We're not in our 50s, man. Stop talking about us like we're old men.
Time out, man. Have you ever done a podcast with some of these young bloods?
No, you're right. They are. They do make me feel old when I talk to a 19-year-old. You're right.
Like, how can you watch this? Not like
that. Right? You're right about that. I guess when I turn 40, which is a few years down the line, maybe I'll say I'm an old man. I'm trying to say that I'm in that gray area. I'm not old and I'm not young. Does that make any sense?
No, we definitely are, because I can still go out there and hoop with some of the young bloods a little bit, but then eventually I start getting winded a little bit more. Then I'm like, man, I can't go as long as I used to.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, and then, you know, you wake up and all of a sudden your knee hurts. Like, what did I do yesterday?
Exactly.
Well, listen, man, this has been a blast. You know it's not going to be the last time. It's actually probably just the beginning, man. We've done so many of these before, and we're going to continue that momentum going, man. It's always a pleasure, Conrad. Thank you so, so much. I mean that genuinely.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Sean.
Yes, you already know. So with that being said, that's the homeboy Conrad of the Everything Pro Wrestling brand. He is so good. Make sure you check him out. I'm your homeboy, Sean Hubbard, the founder and host of Hubbard Wrestling Weekly, and we will talk to you next time. God bless and good night. Later.
You have been listening to the Hubbard Wrestling Weekly podcast. which is an original production of HubbardWrestlingWeekly.com. Hubbard Wrestling Weekly is an independently owned company. The opinions and ideas of its host and studio guest are theirs and theirs alone, as Hubbard Wrestling Weekly is not associated with any professional wrestling, mixed martial arts, or boxing organization. Hubbard Wrestling Weekly, the very best in professional wrestling and combat sports.